You're listening to Colchonero Chat, the premier English language podcast on Atletico Madrid and a part of Into the Calderon, the SB Nation home for all things Atletico. I'm Jeremy Barron. My guest on this edition of Colchonero Chat is David Cartledge. He is a scout and a Spanish football journalist whose work can be found at BN Sports USA, 442, and others. David joins me to preview Atletico's trip to El Molinón this weekend to face struggler Sporting Gijón. All things from that game are discussed, as well as Champions League, Europa League, new contracts, transfers. We've got it all on this edition of Colchonero Chat. Stay tuned.
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
Good, very good. Y'all settled in?
Yeah, all settled in. Yeah, a bit ill, but yeah, settled in.
It's too bad. You mentioned you're in a hotel. What are you doing out? Scouting?
I'm in Vigo at the moment. I'm going to see Celta tonight.
Oh, very nice.
So, yeah, looking forward to that. Seeing Shakhtar. So, yeah, and the weather is good. The weather's usually terrible in this part of Spain.
Yes,
so
it is.
The fact it's good is really strange.
Yeah, hopefully there's not going to be any rain on you or anything of that nature.
Yeah, or wind. There's been a lot of wind.
The wind.
So, I mean, yeah. I live like an hour away in Lugo, and the weather's been terrible.
Yeah. Again, hopefully it's all right for you tonight. But yeah, Celta Shakhtar should be a good one. Yeah, we can talk a little bit about Europa League a little later on. But yeah, for this, we'll just talk about the game on Saturday. I did see we got a question, so that's good. We can answer that. So we'll talk about Saturday. We'll talk a little bit about the Champions League, I think, because that's fresh in a lot of people's minds. And yeah, this will just be a conversation, pretty much. This will be pretty chill, pretty relaxed.
Cool.
All right, so let's get started. Sporting Gijón, a side that once ripped off three straight top five finishes in the 1970s, played European football. They fell on hard times in the 1990s, but reemerged from the depths of financial despair to get back into La Liga last season. It was a pretty great story. And after finishing 17th last season, the start was positive this season. Two wins and a draw from the first three, but then 5 points from the next 15, and now there's a new manager. It's gone pretty south from there. Generally, how are you feeling with the team still in the drop zone?
Honestly, it's pretty depressing. As well as the usual reasons, you know, you don't like to see your team down there, but also there's not much hope, there's not much belief. There's not really that many signs of positivity. I mean, okay, there was a 2-0 win against Leganes last weekend, the first bright spot in quite a while, but no, this team is prepared for Segunda, I think, quite frankly.
No team averages fewer shots per game. Only two have scored fewer goals from open play. Has any of this surprised you?
Absolutely not, because I think the seeds were kind of sown in the summer, really. I think we looked at the way that the board set about building the squad, and I think we actually had a good squad last season. There really was a good squad there. There's a good nucleus, but we lost our best players. You know, their contracts weren't renewed. They weren't asking for big money, but the board didn't deem them worthy enough of new deals. And people went to Leicester, people went to Middlesbrough, and then Johnny went to Malaga as well. And when somebody's going to Malaga, a team that we should really be competing with, we're kind of saying, okay, there's something wrong here. So the squad just isn't good enough. The starting 11 isn't good enough. The squad isn't good enough. And really, I think everybody knew this was going to happen in the summer. And there's been no surprise here.
Yeah. Who was the biggest loss, do you think? Was it Hernandez leaving for Leicester?
Yeah, I think it was. He was such a huge character, you know. To compare him, he was kind of our Diego Godin meshed with Gabi. He's that sort of figure, you know. He's our defender, but he's also our leader on the field as well. And to lose him, it really took a lot. And then when you take away his defensive partner, Bernardo, as well, you're kind of like, oh, God, where do we go from here? Yeah, and we've got a great kid in Jorge Mere, really, really talented. You know, he's going to go all the way, I think. But, you know, Bernardo and Luis Hernandez, they were just fantastic for us. And to lose them, it was catastrophic for any team.
Yeah, what were the motivations, do you think, for the board doing this and kind of tearing apart, I guess, a team that had a... survived this first year back in La Liga, which is no small feat.
Just purely financial, to suit their own needs, you know, to make sure the club is run at the level that they're making money, that the club isn't losing vast amounts. And it's strange because, you know, like when you're a small team in the Liga, coming about money, you know, putting money back into the club is very difficult. But the board have made things 10 times harder. I think we had some money available and it hasn't been used, quite frankly. And I think they just built for Segunda. It's such a shame. And then hope that they would survive by the skin of their teeth. The board would take finishing 17th every single season, quite frankly, for the next decade. They really would.
Yeah, and that's, you got to have some ambition at some point. Again, surviving that first season, especially on the final day, beating Villarreal, who were in the Champions League at that point, it was great to see. And Abelardo was the man in charge at that time. He was, I think, still is a hero there. What really went wrong for him this season? Because he was let go after 5 points in 15 games.
Yeah, I mean, you can blame two areas, really, or three, really. I mean, you can always look at the players. You know, the players have got to be accountable. We're waking up this morning about Arsenal, and we're hearing about Arsene Wenger a lot, but we're not hearing about the players who didn't try much, you know.
Sure.
And Sporting's players, they didn't really give that enough commitment, but I think they'd maxed out, to be honest. They'd given so much the last 2 years, then I think maybe they'd hit a ceiling. And then we needed to reinforce and build on that and make the squad better, rotate better, but that wasn't done, so in that part, you blame the board. But Abelardo, you know, he has to take some blame as well. You know, he's never been a great manager tactically. He's always been a motivator. He's very vocal. He's very loud. He's very passionate. He's very emotional. And that resonated with the team because a lot of the players are Asturian. So they saw in Abelardo, who's Asturian as well, you know, that they saw this kinship there and they understand what he was talking about. And he got through to them. But I think everybody reaches an emotional level where they max out and they just hit that, and we needed something else. You needed a better manager tactically. Either Abelardo needed to improve or we needed a better manager tactically. And they feel now that Ruby is the latter, a better manager tactically.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Let's talk about the good. Ruby has come in. He oversaw Levante last season before they went down. What have you seen from him and the style of play that has made you optimistic?
Just organisational. You straight away see that Sporting have been set up in a better manner. They're more organised, they're less gung-ho. I feel we got promoted to Primera and played exactly the same way that we did in Segunda. And you kind of do that because you will get destroyed, because there's better finishers, there's better players in the league, and you will get punished like we did against Alaves. You know, we played, and even Ruby there fell into that trap as well. We played a bit Segunda style, and I think we have to be a bit more smarter. The idea behind Ruby is that he comes in, he maybe shuts up shop a little bit, and we've got limits, and he's going to play at those limits, and he's not really going to exceed them. And that's how things are with this club. They're very much about hitting limits. They don't really want to exceed, and that's the problem that we have. And the problem with Ruby, a coach who I personally don't rate, I thought at Levante he had an excellent squad out of the teams who he was fighting with, and he did nothing with it.
Yeah, that's a pretty good point, because few key guys from that Levante squad are now on the Alaves side that are going to be playing in the Copa del Rey final. So,
yeah, exactly. And I mean, he had guys like Davison, who's been brilliant this season, Giuseppe Rossi, who's at Celta now. You know, players like this, they really backed him in January, and then he did nothing with that squad. He continued to play extremely defensive football, trying to organise them, and he didn't really capitalise on the players that they actually had. And I mean, I can't see how he's going to get anything out of this Sporting squad, which must be one of the worst squads he's worked with.
Yeah. Should Sporting be more proactive, in your opinion? Should they be more attacking? As I mentioned, their attacking stats are not great. And if you run the risk of being too defensive, of just not doing anything.
We brought some decent attacking players in, don't get me wrong, you know, but they're not incredible. But I think we should do more. I think you should always be doing more. Sporting's brand of football has always been attacking, high intensity, kind of playing with your heart on your sleeve, you know, playing with that passion and that emotion. It's just how the club is. And, you know, it's very cliche, perhaps, you know, and I know people like to talk about stats things these days and XG and things like that, but Sporting's a club that thrives on intensity, thrives on passion, and that's just how it is. It's the makeup of the city of the people. So you have to play like that, and the fans will respond to that. That's what happened in our Segunda promotion year. We played with such a high level of emotion. It was incredible to watch. These were kids who supported Sporting. were from Asturias, the region, and played for the team. It was incredible, and it was the show there on the field, and we don't have that now.
Yeah, it really was a homegrown success story, and as you said, that is kind of gone as the team fights to stay in La Liga. Who has stood out this season for you guys? Sergio Alvarez is a guy I've liked in midfield there. Just turned 25, averages better than 4 tackles, 2.5 interceptions per 90. So other than him, who else has been really solid this season?
Yeah, Alvarez is a great pick. You know, he really should be playing at a higher level right now. He should be someone, perhaps at an Eibar. You know, if Eibar lose a player in the summer, they might well pick up Sergio. I think they'd be sensible there. But other than that, you know, it's very scant pickings. I mean, Dusch Kopp has scored goals for us, but quite frankly, he doesn't work hard enough. His heart's not really in it. I don't think you can see, and he's very demotivated a lot of the time, and it's hard to get him souped up. But he's a good finisher, and I think he can go into better things as well. But probably his Mera, the young centre back, you know, I think he's done really well considering he's pretty much been hung out to dry. I think Fernando Amorebieta, his defensive partner, is a really poor defender, and I think if you're partnering him, you'll have to be really intelligent and really aware, because he sometimes loses his position. Sometimes he loses it a lot. So Murray has to step up. So I think he's just been fantastic. And they're two guys, Alvarez and Murray, who are probably going to leave the club, and I'll completely understand why.
Yeah, Murray's only, he's only 19, isn't he?
Yeah, he's just 19. You know, he's in the under-21 squad, the under-19 squad. You know, he's been through all the ranks for Spain, and now it's just a case of where he goes to. You know, Valencia have been linked, and a few of the clubs have been linked as well, English teams. And yeah, he's inevitably going to go at the end of the season, you know, even if we suddenly stayed up, but he's going, yeah.
Yeah, which could be too bad, because it looks like he's going to be a very, very good player. Leganés win last weekend, it was pretty big, but how big? How much do you think it's going to move the needle?
I think the players desperately needed a win. The confidence is just rock bottom, and they really needed a win, some sign of life, I think, within themselves to see that they could still win games, and they got that. And you know, but like Bergi played brilliantly, the ex-Real Madrid Espanyol guy, and he played really, really well, but he hasn't done enough this season, and he just suddenly decided to turn up. And it's really strange when these players do, who have been given chances, and then suddenly they do, and you're kind of like, where have you been for the rest of the season? And that's pretty annoying, but I don't know. It's good, I think, in the short term, but in the long term, I generally don't think it's going to mean too much for us.
Yeah, especially with the team coming to visit this weekend in Atletico. What differences do you think we'll see from the 5-0 game back in September, if any, for both Sporting and Atletico?
I think a lot more deeper set Sporting. They'll look to frustrate Atleti, which obviously won't be great news to Atleti, because they have problems, I think, against deep block teams, and Sporting right. will sit in very, very deep, and they will go five across the back, you know, and then they will leave one man up top to chase around loose balls, and that's how it's going to have to be. And Simeone will be prepared for that, I am absolutely certain, and Atleti will need all the individual inspiration they can call upon.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I would definitely expect Sporting to see a lot of possession in this very fixture. Last year it was kind of a similar situation. Atletico went up through a free kick from Antoine Griezmann, then decided to shut up shop. Sporting scored 2 late goals and notched probably the biggest result of the season last year. I would expect kind of a similar game, maybe with a different result, though. So we can expect to see 5 at the back. Do you think Atletico are going to do anything different than the 4-4-2? How can they best break down a very defensive setup like that?
I think they'll get like an overload potentially on creative midfielders. You know, somebody like Gabby doesn't really have to play this game. You know, you can have potentially Carrasco, Correa in the same team with Koke, Griezmann. You know, you can overload basically. I don't think there's any too much risk really. You can sit back with maybe Koke sitting as the deepest line midfielder, but I think the defense can do a job for Atleti against Sporting, and they don't need to worry too much.
Yeah, there's also the Champions League commitment in next week in midweek. I think Gabby not playing would be a I don't think he's essential for this game. Carrasco, Correa, Gaetan, they could all start. I would expect to see a pretty attacking Atletico, some guys coming off on the hour just to make sure everyone's all set for the trip to Germany.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the last thing Simeone wants is this game to be a long, drawn-out process where Letty's searching for the breakthrough at about the 75th minute, you know, that they'll want an early goal and then that will really open the game up and change things, and then Sporting will have to throw their initial plan out the window.
Yeah. Will that early goal come from Fernando Torres? He's been revitalized for now. What have you made of his recent form?
Yeah, he's looked a lot better. You know, it's hard with Fernando because I think he fluctuates between extremes. You know, he has a good little run, and then other times he really doesn't look like he brings anything to the team at all. Even his much famed running and stretching of defences, it seems like he can't do that either. But I think he's the sort of player who will pop up with a goal against Sport, and it's very much his type of game, I think, you know, to crop up, you know, at the back post, to pounce on a loose ball in the penalty area. So he's somebody you could certainly use, I think, in this game.
Yeah, and he's up to 5 league goals now. He's scored each of the last 2 weeks. I think the smart money is on him scoring in a third straight week. But we'll see. If he does, just the banter will be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. because the calls for him to just replace Kevin Gamero permanently in the starting 11, they're only growing. And it would be another high-priced striker that he's seen off that Simeone trusts him instead of this high-priced striker again. It's kind of amazing how he has done this in February. The calendar turned to February, and he's doing it again, you know?
It's quite incredible. I mean, you look at Atleti and, you know, you can't really pick too many problems with them, quite honestly, but that centre-forward spot is such a glaring problem for them, and it has been for a number of years, and it's not been without trying to address it, and then you're left now potentially relying on Torres, this guy who's almost, I've said, I think he's on a victory lap at Atleti, and it's incredible that he might be the man to call upon at the business end of the season.
Yeah, that's a great point. And not only have Atletico dealt with the center forward issues this season, there have also been issues at the back, which are very, very rare for this Simeone team. What have you made of Atletico's defense this season, which has already conceded as many goals as it did all of last season?
Yeah, I mean, it's been the first year in a while, and it's where they've had to deal with omissions. You know, I think losing Oblak, people say, oh, Oblak had this great defence in front of him, you know, that's why he's always got loads of clean sheets. Well, no, Oblak saves a lot, you know, he steps up in games a lot for Atleti. You know, he plays a big part in this famous defence, you know, as much as Godin, as much as anybody like that. But other than that, I don't know, I'm worried about Verasco because he's come in and he's had some good games, and then he had a spell where, I don't know, he fell off a little bit, and then he's come back in again now, and I think he really has to impress, because that place, that right back slot is probably one of the ones that you look at in the Atleti team is potentially being up for grabs in the short term, you know. I think there's probably that and Gabby's role where you'll say, okay, these guys are age and these are two areas where we could potentially replace, so he really needs to step up. But then on the flip side, you look at somebody like Jimenez, who since the turn of the year, I think it was the back end of the year when he was playing those copper games in centre midfield, he came a little bit, and he really turned a corner then.
He did.
He's been phenomenal ever since, and Atleti look a much better team, look much more like the old Atleti with Jimenez in there. He still carries that spirit.
Yeah, you think he should be placed in midfield permanently or move back to centre-back next to Godin?
No, I'd leave the defence. I think given the problems that have been at the back, I think long term he is a centre back. But I think that slot in midfield kind of was a good spell for him because it gave him a bit more inspiration, a bit more motivation again in the team. And now he's carried it on to when he's gone back to centre back, and he's a fantastic centre back, and he's shown it again, thankfully.
Yeah, he's been awesome. Before he got hurt again, he was doing really, really great. He's been cleared to play. I'd expect he's going to start on Saturday. It was Savage and Lucas last week, and that didn't go too well. Celta really ripped that apart, especially on the counterattack. You mentioned earlier how the right side has been kind of an issue for Atleti this season because Juan Fran hasn't been in great form. Xime Versalico's come in. He's done pretty well. And then you have Carrasco, who Simeone wants to play on the right, but he mostly plays on the left because he likes to play on the left-hand side. What do you make of... We've had a debate here on this program about what Atletico's right back, who Atletico's right back should be, who should be playing in right midfield as well. Do you think it should be a Versalico-Juanfran combination? How can Atletico get the most out of the right-hand side with Juanfran not doing as well as in years past?
Yeah, I absolutely concur with that. I think it should be Rosalco and Juan Fran on that right side, because I don't think Atleti have got a proper right winger right now. And Juan Fran has played there and done so very, very well when he was at Osasuna. So I think he can go back there, absolutely. You know, he's still really, really fit. You know, he's still got a bit of pace, so he can work there. And also, it helps Atleti's problems in defence as well, because if you've got double fullbacks, then it gives you more awareness and a bit more better positional play. When you're without the ball as well, so that helps as well. So I think it's probably something they should really, really look into doing more often.
Yeah, the concern is that he's not nearly as attacking as like Nico Gaitán is, but I think Juan Fran has always been kind of overlooked in terms of his creating chances, in terms of his passing contribution, and I think Rosalco and Juan Fran have to be careful of not occupying each other's space so often. But yeah, I agree. I think that that has to be the preferred pairing down the right-hand side.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, when you mentioned Gaitán as well, I think he's better on the left, or he's better just behind the strikers, and, you know, and he's somebody I think Atleti down the straight have got to bring into the game more, because he's such a fantastic player. And I don't know, that he hasn't been given enough chances. And I think when he has started, he's potentially been hauled off sometimes as well. And it is really, really annoying that happens. So we'll have to see what happens with Gaitán, but hopefully he gets more minutes.
Yeah.
Because he's such a great player to have in the squad.
His technical quality is outstanding. And he's really, really technically sound. He's very talented. His passing range is unlike really anyone else's in the squad. But he hasn't been given a whole lot of chances, and he hasn't impressed too often. He's kind of been up, and his form has really been up and down. He played well a couple times in January, scored the winner against Real Betis, but now his place in the 11 isn't as assured. So yeah, hopefully he does get a little more time, and this game can be perfect for him, because he's probably not going to play a major role on Tuesday. Simeone is going to choose his best squad on Tuesday, and Gaitán hasn't been in that all season, so this could be a big chance on Saturday for Gaitán to get 75-90 minutes in.
Yeah, absolutely, and again, there's a place up there, because I think Carrasco, you know, he's had a good performance recently, but I still don't think the consistency is there, so it's another place that is potentially up for grabs. You know, I think Carrasco, Correa and Gaitán have got to be looking at themselves and saying, look, this place is up for grabs here, we can really help Atleti down the straight, we can really, you know, make the season ours here. So them three have got to get together all individually and just look and say, right, I've got to take my chances.
Sure. Last thing from this game, scoreline prediction, what do you got?
I'm going to say 2-0 for Atleti, a breakthrough on around 60 minutes, and then they'll get into the goal when Sporting push on, so in about 80 minutes. So yeah, but I think 2-0 to Atleti sounds all right.
Yeah, 2-0 is very reasonable. I think I'm going to have to agree with you. Yeah, I usually I try to give a different scoreline prediction, but 2-0 seems eminently reasonable. Yeah, so, yep, that's the early game on Saturday, so should be a pretty good one. You want to talk about Champions League a little bit?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Yeah, really some big results this week in terms of the margin. PSG and Barcelona, I think, was the most stunning one. How I was shocked at this result. I was so not looking forward to another PSG Barcelona tie, but then I watched this and I was just floored by PSG's reaction. They were just phenomenal.
Yeah, they were outstanding. You can't fault them at all. There was some major individual performances and key. I think they were set up so well by Unai Emery, and contrast with Barcelona, who just weren't set up well at all. And obviously weren't very clear on how they would approach the game, and which was a big thing for them, and which is obviously playing out now in the media about Luis Enrique. So that was the contrast. It was two different teams, you know. It was a motivated set of players against a group that are low on confidence, and one who was set up tactically superbly and the other one who evidently wasn't.
Yeah, Barcelona's midfield was just a disaster. Do you blame Barcelona more for this result, or is it more about giving credit to PSG? Because I've seen it argued both ways.
Yeah, I think, not to take anything away from PSG, but I really do think that this was 50-50. I think PSG were excellent. They put an incredible level of effort in and quality, and there were some major performances from there. But also, I think Barca are in an incredibly bad moment. And I think if you set up your team right, if you approach them right and get at certain areas, then they can be got at and really be taken apart right now because of the way they are set up. And they're just playing without a midfield. It's staggering to watch a Barcelona side without a midfield, you know. Yeah. And that's how teams can get at them, but not many teams do, because it's Barcelona and MSN are there and they cover up a lot of cracks, and yeah, teams are scared of them, so they won't go at them so much.
It's all the old flaws coming home to roost. Messi cannot paper over every single crack. MSN cannot paper over all these cracks that the board just did not replace players properly. Some players like Xavi, Puyol, those guys are irreplaceable, but these have been the same holes for several years now, and a more direct style, I think, kind of lends itself to those holes, to those flaws being exposed, and they certainly were on Tuesday. And yeah, at 2-0, I would say Barcelona definitely had a good chance of coming back. At 3-0, okay, tough, but if they score an away goal, then they should be fine. But 4-0, very, very long way back. I'd say a very, very remote chance that they come back in the second leg. You never know for sure, but with the way they played, they looked just soulless out there. It was very, very strange to see.
Exactly, and I think, and like you say, I think it is a remote possibility, but you've got to take into two factors. You've got to take in the fact that they do still have MSN, and on any given night they can score 5 or 6 against the best teams. And then there's also Unai Emery as well, who I'm still not completely convinced by in when it comes to playing Barcelona and in Europe as well, and in two-legged games. You just never know with him, and I do just wonder if he'll get into the camp now and he'll see that place again and really get the nerves again, and that maybe will filter through to the players. I don't know, but it is pretty much over. But I'm straying away from saying it is completely done.
Yeah, I'm a little wary of saying it's done, because you never know, they could go out and they could win 5-0. You just don't know. They could summon exactly that again. Benfica and Dortmund. It seems like Mitroglou always scores. For every Champions League game for Benfica, he scores in every single game. So there I had 1-0 on aggregate, and Aubameyang missed a penalty. That means he's totally coming to Atletico this summer. He's perfect.
Absolutely. I think Dortmund's an interesting one, because I think a lot of people are saying they should be doing better than they are, considering how they spend and the talent they have got. But you've got to look at them, and it's a really young group, and you know, and Tuchel's just come in as well, and it's a work in progress, I feel, constantly at Dortmund. And then they've got a striker there, you know, Aubameyang, who just, again, he does not want to be there at all. It's evident. I mean, they brought up his body language, and I've never seen such poor body language from a player, you know, and they've got problems, Dortmund, in that sense with him. But I think it's a talented squad they've got there, and I think there has to be a lot of patience with them.
Yeah, I mean, they're so young. And your point on Aubameyang is well taken, because a lot of Atletico supporters have complained about Griezmann's overtures in the media about maybe going to the Premier League, maybe not, and not focusing on Atletico, disrespecting the club. Yeah, look at what Aubameyang is doing at Dortmund. Just completely out of the
loop. He maybe does speak to the press. Griezmann may do speak to the press, but I think his on-field performances are always of an exceptional level. He's always trying. Nobody works as hard as him, you know. I think that level is always there from Griezmann, so I will say that about him.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. Real Madrid and Napoli from Wednesday. Napoli put a scare into them, as I think a lot of people expected, but in the end, Real Madrid just have too much individual quality, scored some beautiful goals, especially the Casemiro goal, which that was completely unexpected, that strike.
Yeah, it was outstanding. It was really outstanding, and I don't think Napoli could really get their game going. You know, Napoli's best quality is playing these high-intensity, quick transitions, this transition game, and they couldn't get it going because Real Madrid set in really, really well. Their setup was perfect, and then they got Napoli down the gaps that they left behind the fullbacks, and then it was pretty much Real Madrid's game to take, and I think in the end, Real Madrid could have scored 4 or 5.
Yeah, for I'd say about the final 75 minutes or so, that this was all Real Madrid. Napoli started out very well, got that amazing goal from Insigne, but in the end, just too much individual quality. Do you think that tie is over? Even with the away goal, do you think it's over?
I would never say. I think the fact that they have to go back to Naples, and that's such a special place, and on a European night, you know, it's just insane, the noise. I went a few years ago for a Napoli game there, and it's just, it's something else. It's one of the last great bastions of authentic European nights, you know, that old stadium. It is still fantastic, and you've got one at the Calderon, and I think Valencia have got one at Mestalla as well. Not that they're in Europe these days. But yeah, so it's something that they can do. I think Napoli can do. Honestly, if they were to go an early goal, then I think Real Madrid would really panic.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I'm not sure they can put two or three past them while holding Madrid just one goal conceded. I'm not sure that, but you know, Napoli at home could be a different story. As you said, the atmosphere at San Paolo is pretty special. Lastly, yeah. Bayern and Arsenal. It's all very unsurprising. It just is. What happens to Arsenal in the last 16?
Yeah, it really is. It's just it's copy and paste, really, isn't it? You know, we probably spoke to somebody last year, and you could have just recorded our conversation about Arsenal and played it on the podcast, because it would have been just exactly the same things. Mental strength, things like this, you know, like attitude, everything like that. You know, Arsene Wenger, you know, he's hit the ceiling, you know, he's done amazing work, but it's time to move on, things like that. But Arsenal remain the same. But I kind of think last night actually was that bad, that this actually will be the final time that we are repeating the same thing about Arsenal. I think Wenger's going to go in the summer. I really do.
Like, it really should be. What's it going to take? You know, a 7-0 loss? A 10-1 loss? What is it going to take? It's clear that, to me at least, that the response isn't there. The mental strength, the fortitude isn't there. And it just, something needs to change. It's needed to change for a few years.
Yeah, I think the whole outlook of the club needs to change. I think behind the scenes, they are not run properly. Again, it's a business, almost, Arsenal, behind the scenes. And then from a coaching level as well, I don't think Wenger has evolved properly. You know, at the time, he was a pioneer. You know, he brought in so many new things in England we'd never heard of in England. You know, in the Premier League, there was the bad days of the gambling and the drinking culture. And Wenger is somebody who brought in nutrition and eating well and looking after yourself. And, you know, without him, then English football would be in a sorry state now. But, he's done great work. It's okay to say that he's done great work. And it's also okay to say it's time to go. It's just how it is.
Yeah, he was revolutionary back in the day. And that revolution kind of stopped around, I don't know, 2009, the last time they made the semifinals of the Champions League. So it's been time for a while, but this might finally be it. Just the kind of gutless display they put on at Allianz Arena. I mean, Bayern were great. Thiago in particular was outstanding. And I haven't fully rated Thiago in the past because he hasn't been able to stay healthy enough for me to see him on a frequent basis. But no, yesterday you could see just how much potential he has and how good he can be when he's playing in the right position, when he's fit. He was phenomenal yesterday, and you know, Bayern are through.
I really do think he's such a unique player when you look at from Spain's point of view.
Yeah,
you look at Thiago. I watched him come through the ranks at what I think under 16, under 17, 19, and you know, he really stood out. He's one of the maybe five players who have really stood out in youth football in Spain, I think, over the last few years. You know, guys like Isco stood out as well, like immeasurably so. And now I think guys like Dani Ceballos and Carlos Alenia, they're showing up as well. And Thiago is one of them. He's got such confidence and such intelligence on the ball. It is fantastic to watch. He's the perfect footballer, I think. He really, really is. And it's only been injuries in his way, quite frankly, because other than that, I think we honestly, with Thiago, we're looking at a potential Ballon d'Or candidate, but he has to stay fit. He has to play 40 plus games in the season. He has to really, Spain's his now. The Spanish team is his to dictate, to take over, to run. And it's just a case of if he can stay fit and do that, because he's certainly capable.
And David Moyes wasn't sure about him.
Yeah, so he preferred Tom Cleverley. So here we go.
Next week, what are you looking for next week? Because we have Atletico, obviously, on Tuesday. Man City and Monaco, as well as Leicester-Sevilla, which is the one I'm irrationally excited about.
Yeah, Leicester-Sevilla is some tie. It's the one what came out of that draw, and you're like, whoa. This looked like, you know, that really took everybody back, and that's going to be a fascinating tie. And you look at that, it really has got so much about it that's intriguing, because Leicester's Premier League season is pretty much over. So do they just go for broke in the Champions League? And it could be a potentially incredible two-legged affair. And then you look at Monaco and the other tie as well, who are the team on everybody's lips at the moment. They really are. They're so exciting. Again, another young team like Dortmund but they're playing with such a great confidence, and they've got a great coach in there in Jardim as well.
And they have Falcao, the legend.
Yes, of course. yeah, they have Falcao. Yeah. I think in this form, Atleti would probably have him back.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Speaking of Atleti, a couple news items to get to. Thomas Partey renewed his contract earlier this week. He extended it by 3 years to 2022. He's a guy who hasn't always been preferred by Simeone, so this renewal kind of took me a little bit by surprise. What have you made of Thomas in the past? Do you think Simeone should be giving him more of a chance?
I think he's a great squad player. I'm not too sure if he can be anything more. I understand this contract renewal because it gives Atleti a little bit of protection to maybe get a higher fee if an English club or whoever comes in and wants to pay quite a bit of money for Thomas, then it gives Atleti a bit more protection and they can say, we want this amount. He's got a long-term contract with us. So I think they've done it from that point of view because there is interest from England there. So it'll be interesting to see that one with Thomas. I'll be surprised if he stayed at Atleti.
Yeah, I'd still expect him to be a pretty strong loan candidate for next season. I mean, Simeone just... I'd like Simeone to give him a run in the team because I think he is a pretty talented player, but... he's just, there are a lot of other options, especially in central midfield. You have Gabi, you have Koke, you have Saul, even Thiago, I think, is preferred to him, and Thiago is supposed to be coming back this week. He should be in the squad for the Champions League next week, so it's tough for Thomas because he has quite the mountain to climb at this club in particular, but somewhere else, like maybe a mid-table Premier League club, which is where he's been linked, I think he could really thrive. So we'll see what happens with him in the future.
Definitely.
I'm not going to make a habit of doing this, of asking every guest this, because frankly it's starting to irritate me, but you think Griezmann's leaving this summer? Because I value your perspective. You think he's out this summer?
This is like, I'm just, this is just my opinion. I'm not basing on what I've heard or anything like that,
but sure.
I think that he will stay one more year.
Yeah, I've heard that he's likely going to go this summer, but it would create kind of a, it would open a Pandora's box if he left this summer, because Atleti couldn't replace him. And again, he's mentioned before how much he appreciates the club. He was caught singing the club hymn before the club anthem before the first leg against Barcelona. Yeah, that's commitment, and I don't think fans realize that see that on a weekly basis when they just see him, you know, not scoring or not setting anyone up, and Atletico scoring only once or not at all. But no, he's such a key player and a great player. Even though he's had a disappointing season, I think he kind of has to stay, and I think he will stay if Simeone does. And that is my hope, and that is my opinion, that he'll give it one more go.
Yeah, I agree. I think one more year, because as well, I don't think there's too many enticing projects around right now. You know, he said it well himself the other day. He went through all the main options and he just said about them. And you know, he's right. He can't go to Real Madrid, you know. Barcelona's got MSN, you know, so he can't go there. So that rules out Liga. And Atleti would not sell him probably to either of them anyway, even if there was a way. And so Manchester United really does look like the only genuine option. But he needs to judge to see if it actually is a genuine option, because it might not be. So he needs to assess it. And, you know, he spoke about the weather, and that's cool because, like, the weather is terrible. But also the project itself, he needs to see where that's going, to see if that's going in the right direction, and not just go because his mate Pogba's there, you know? He needs to do it for the right reasons.
Yeah. The fun news item I came across this morning, right before we started recording, Mark Clattenburg, who refereed the Champions League final last May, he is quitting English refereeing and going to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, indeed. You know, he's a good referee.
He
but
is.
The thing is, he wants to make himself famous. He wants to be more than a referee. A referee is not meant to be heard, basically, other than the whistle, you know. But Clattenburg is somebody who is almost a celebrity on the level of the footballers, or at least he wants to be. So he is a good referee, but sometimes things get overshadowed because of that off-field persona he's got, and our on-field persona as well. He sometimes shows it on-field.
Yeah, and he's kind of become bigger than the occupation in a way. Yeah, you talk about English refereeing, he's like the first or second name that comes up. So yeah, go get that money. You know, referees don't get paid like that. Go get your money.
Yeah, no. I mean, he is. He's a really good referee, and you know, I hope it's acknowledged how good he actually is. You know, England don't have many good referees, so to get one who is deemed by many to be the best in the world, you know, you look at the games that he has had, then okay, then it's understandable. So yeah, but you know, he's going to be earning some nice money, so fair play to him there as well.
Absolutely, fair play to him. We do have a question to answer before I let you go, David. This is from at Newell Weinchard, and really hope I'm pronouncing that right. If I'm not, I'm terribly sorry. Should Torres be the number one striker from now on for Cholo? In this form, yes.
No. I would say not at this precise moment, no. I think rotation's got to take place. I don't think there should be anybody set in stone to be Atleti's lead striker. It should be a rotational thing. And also, they can play without a striker, I think.
Yeah, they could. I mean, Simeone does not like to do that. He loves to play 4-4-2, which has been a little vexing, especially this season when it's been clear that maybe 4-2-3-1 is a better formation. But in this form, I think Torres probably should be next to Griezmann. He has the most chemistry with Griezmann. He's played with him the most. And Griezmann's played with Torres the most since Torres came back. So, hey, if this keeps up, I think Torres should probably be the number one striker. But we'll see what happens next week. We'll see what happens in the coming weeks, starting this weekend at El Molinón. So you are in Vigo tonight. You are going to go see Celta and Shakhtar.
Indeed.
And that should be a cracker. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm sure you are too, because you're actually there.
It's going to be a game. I'm excited. I like watching Celta. They're one of my favorite teams to watch, other than my own, even though I don't get much enjoyment out of my own team.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're one of my favorite sides to watch, and for me, they've probably got Atletico Madrid's next manager as well, so there we go.
Yeah, Barrizo, he's been linked in the past. I wouldn't hate that. No, I mean, his team,
yeah,
Celta plays.
Yeah, that sense.
Yeah, Celta plays such great football. Yeah, Barrizo, it would make a lot of sense. I think he'd be nice.
They play good football, you know, he's strong-willed as well, you know, he's got a bit of grit about him, he's got a bit of passion about him, what Atleti fans would respond to as well. I think it would be quite an easy transition from Simeone, probably the easiest one I can think of anyway.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about this the other day, whether Atleti should pick someone like Berizzo or keep it in-house with maybe Mauro Burgos as Cholo's replacement if he wants to stay. I've started thinking about that a little bit more as the clock keeps ticking and we have just about a year left of Simeone, my estimation. You think they should go for someone like totally, and maybe not tactically totally out of this world, but someone like Barrizo who's pretty different from Cholo, or should they keep it in-house?
I think Barrizo, honestly, I think he's got a lot of similarities with Cholo as well, and I don't mean just by nationality. He's got a lot of similarities in the way he can set up a team, and I think he's shown that Celta have got a nice balance to their side. They can attack, but they can defend intelligently too. And he's handled some players that, you know, big players well there, you know, and he's shown a hard line of discipline with people, a guy like Arianna, who's been booted out of the club after numerous strokes of indiscipline.
Right.
So I think it's there. The signs are there. I really do think it's really well set up for Barrizo to come in at Atleti in the next 2 years, potentially.
Yeah, you don't always see Celta playing great at the back or being terribly organized at the back because they play at such a frenetic tempo and such a frenetic pace. But yeah, I mean, that I think is overlooked sometimes. So you have that to look forward to tonight. I'm envious. Villarreal and Roma as well. That's going to be a great, great tie. And then what's the other one?
It's
Athletic and who else? I can't remember.
Yeah, Athletic's got the Apoel Nicosia.
That's right. Apoel.
Yeah.
Yeah, so pretty high quality stuff. And Spanish teams just keep on keeping on in European competition. What else, David? You got anything else?
That's all. I think we've covered everything. I think we really have covered everything there.
Fantastic. I think we have too. Well, I'm going to get to the sign-off message. I'd like to thank my guest, David Cartledge.
It's been really nice joining you. Thanks a lot. And I look forward to being back on in the future.
Yeah, I'll ask you to stay on for a second while I complete this sign-off message. You can follow David on Twitter at David, J-A-C-A. You can follow me at J.B. Barron, J-B-B-E-R-E-N. Follow Into the Calderon on Twitter at Into the Calderon, and like us on Facebook as well. You can subscribe to all new and archived episodes of Colchonero Chat on the following platforms: You can subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of Colts Narrow Chat on the following platforms: iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, Google Play, and TuneIn. So you can find us there. Leave a review and a rating on iTunes, and that is that. Thank you for listening to Colts Narrow Chat. As ever, we'll catch you next time.